stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No!
Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
Who needs a poorly produced TBS selection show to give you all the March Madness you need on Sunday when you can watch IndyCar? Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
You are the world champion!
Hi, my name is RJ O'Connell, and welcome to the Motorsport 101 podcast. You may notice that Andre Harrison is not here with his dulcet tones to introduce you to episode 126, where we're going to introduce to you and review the IndyCar Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. Thanks, William Hill. But we still have Ryan King. Say hello, Ryan, from wonderful the Bronx, New York City.
Yes, New York City, home to every single college basketball conference tournament under the sun.
Coming soon, the SEC basketball tournament to Madison Square Garden? I guess this makes sense. I mean, Brooklyn is the capital of barbecue now. and it is a fact that... King, one of your favorite drivers, if not your favorite driver, is Sebastian Bourdais.
Yes, yes.
And who does Sebastian Bourdais drive for in the IndyCar series?
He drives for Dale Coyne Racing.
Right. So what does Dale Coyne do when you can't find one stable solution at the other car? Well, you just split it among three super subs from Glasgow, Scotland, Zoe Hamilton.
Yeah, and I'm kind of distracted by a very noisy pup.
Yes, and from Dublin, Ireland, Danny Brennan.
Dublin, Ireland. Oh, RJ.
Oh, God.
So oh, I know I'm a guest.
I just figured out how to pronounce Glasgow correctly without coming at me with a knife, and then this happens.
Then you say that Brennan's from the wrong place.
That is legitimately offensive. Okay, that's fine. It's okay. We're gonna move on.
I've ruined everything. I've ruined everything.
I thought I was gonna ruin this. They let me back on again. I don't know why they let me back on again, but at least I didn't set it on fire this time.
That's true. We're already setting the building on fire. And hey, we're also granted by someone who is 1 degree of separation removed from being an IndyCar driver this weekend, from Montreal, Canada, Charles Regenbold.
Regenbold, no D.
Oh no.
But someone who does have a D in their name is Zachary Clayman DeMello, who finished 17th on his debut for Dale Coyne.
That would be Zachary Clayman DeMello.
Floyd's favorite driver.
Yes, we are all excited about the shoe magnet. The man with all the tattoos. And all the privilege in the world. Dre will likely be recording an episode of the Dre Brief at some point. You can check that out on youtube.com/motorsport101. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/motorsport101. We are on Twitter at motorsport_101. Our personal handles are at Harrison181HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, at WeeZoe, at C Regenbull Racing, and Danny, what's yours?
At DannyBrennan72. Don't ask about the numbers. I'm just a strange person.
That's fine. And of course, for those of you who want to support the show financially, you can back us on patreon.com/motorsport101, where just $5 a month gives you early access to Motorsport 101 and Bike Live on the Motorsport 101 network. It's a good time. It's a good investment. Trust me on this one. Right! IndyCar happened! Boy, did it happen this past weekend! Let's talk about that, shall we? On the day where everybody in St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and parts of Tampa learned about the man, the myth, the legend, who nearly won his first career race, Robert Wickens.
Oh, God. Nearly. That's all I can say.
Oh, goodness. So, the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, the first race of the season, it threw up a lot of surprises, starting with qualifying, which was under threat of rain, which came down just about at the time where they were about to set the fast sit. So we saw a lot of good cars going home without a chance to even qualify for the fast sits, including defending series champion Joseph Newgarden, who didn't even get out of the first phase.
So much for defending the one, huh?
Oh, please don't remind me.
He was defending the 13 on Sunday.
Yes, but we had a very interesting fast sits in which we had three rookies in the top sits. Robert Wickens, Mateus Leist, and Jordan King, all in with a chance. And surprise, surprise, on a last-minute lap dash for the finish, Robert Wickens took pole by nearly half a second over Will Power, becoming only the third driver in modern IndyCar history to start their very first race from pole. King, who were the other two?
The other two were race winner Sebastian Bourdais and Nigel Mansell.
Nice. What did Nigel Mansell go on to do?
Oh, you know, he just won the IndyCar series on his first try and then never appeared in the series again.
Are you implying something about Robert Wickens' season?
Am I?
Yeah, that he just wins it all and is like, hey, I don't know where you would run off to, but run off to someplace.
He does have unfinished business in DTM.
And DTM has a lot of unfinished business that's going to become finished later on this year.
Yeah. Hey, Zoe, so I've got this great idea where where an IndyCar team signs up some dude from Mercedes DTM program. Didn't they try this like 20 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing really missing is that the attempt of an F1 testing contract, which is really just the worst pile of shit ever.
Oh, whoa. Robert Wickens was like a Mercedes young driver.
Yeah, he was. Oh, yes, yeah, he was.
And he was a Manor Marussia test reserve. Robert Wickens, official member of the Manor Marussia Road to Indy.
Yeah, but he wasn't about to be expected to, like, every time you're not in this series, we want you at the track testing our F1 car.
Speaking of the Manor Marussia Road to Indy, who else was in the Fast Six?
Well, not Alexander Rossi, because he was punted out of it at the very end for qualifying interference. I believe Graham Rahal also suffered the same fate.
Rahal spun in Group 2, so he got his two fast laps deleted.
Ah, yes, okay.
In Marco, apparently impeded Spencer Piggott, and he got punted out after making it through Group 2. He got punted out.
Okay.
Basically, it wasn't a good time to be an Andretti driver.
We have three rookies starting inside the top four, which the early portions of this race, they were eventful. Let's just say we had a spin of the opening lap of the race as Will Power was trying to challenge Robert Wickens for the lead, because death taxes Will Power does well at straight courses except when he spins and then suddenly gives himself about 30 degrees more rear wing than he had anticipated.
And they also ruined my fantasy picks. Son of a bitch.
Mine as well. Mine as well.
There's an incident later in the race that also destroyed my fantasy standing after this race, but we'll come to that.
Right. So this today is going to be all about malaise over our fantasy picks. Take it from the guy who had Will Power anchoring the team.
Okay.
how else did things get silly? This was not a good first day on the main IndyCar circuit for Trevor Carlin. It started very bad when Charlie Kimball brought out the first of four full course yellows. He would eventually go on to continue the race, but several laps down. Ryan Hunter Ray also had an eventful start when he had to pit as the cars were coming up to take the green flag. This was due to an ECU issue, and things did not get much better for poor old Matthias Laist, who paced his very first session, and everybody was very excited about the dynasty that is AJ Foyt Enterprises, because we know what a stable organization that team is.
Can I just intervene here? Just two yes. seconds. Oh, sorry. I've been waiting to laugh for about a day. That was the funniest thing I have ever seen in my entire life. They actually turned the ship around, and they were still shit. Oh, retribution. Retribution for Mr. Connor Daly, who is now in, but not in the way we'd all like to see him.
But he is IndyCar's most popular driver. This would also happen to be the first race for the new Universal Aero Kit. Can we give it up for 366 on-track passes today to break the record of 323 set in 2008? Can we give it up for the fact that this race alone almost had as many on-track overtakes as a DRS-assisted Formula One season in 2017?
Though there are a couple things you have to point out where the way that Formula One counts overtakes is different, much, much different than the way IndyCar does.
I mean, that's fair. It's like World of Outlaws victories.
Oh my god.
Oh goodness. Where did we have? We had a lot of calamity. Our second caution of the day came when Graham Rahal and Spencer Pigot came to drama on lap 7. And we're starting
and
to
this
see
a... was when the second of my picks was taken out. There's more pain to come.
Graham Rahal was playing a very shrewd strategy. Caused issues at the start, you're all right at the back, you can't get penalised. Only way to go is up from there. That was clearly his strategy.
Right. This race, we were worried that this was gonna be a time limit race. It did end up going the full distance. And during this, Sebastian Bourdais had cut a tire early on, so they decided to change up the strategy a bit. Typical Dale Coyne strategery.
That race-winning strategery.
We fast forward a few laps, and by this point, it's looking like Robert Wickens has this race mostly under control, but Alexander Rossi had made a pretty good start from 12th place. By the end of the first lap, he was up in the 6th place. And by about the third point mark of the race, he was really, really bearing in on Robert Wickens. If he could find an opportunity to get past, he could surely challenge for the lead. Then we get our third caution. Matthias Laist bends it. He'd been running so well all weekend. Bless his heart.
Should I mention that when the BT ESPN commentators came out, well, it wasn't quite first to last.
Yes, yes. Because I had to watch the BT coverage of the race, and I was like, what? Did they literally just make that joke? First to last?
Yes.
Okay.
It may end up being a long season, depending on how he does this year.
No, nah, he's going to be here for the full duration, I believe.
But how his results go, and that pun, it may be a long season.
Golly.
Ooh,
it was also not a good day for friend of the show, Jack Harvey, whose race ended after 38 laps after he went off course and brought out the fifth caution of the day. In between there, a very amusing moment happened. So right around lap 34, Scott Dixon and Takuma Sato are racing through traffic, and Eddie Cheever, who I believe is celebrating his seventh or eighth season of doing color commentary while mostly asleep. Andy Cheaper comes up with a line that goes to the effect of, yeah, what I like about Ditson is that he always knows when to stop. When he feels like he's going to lose control of the car under braking, he just pulls the nose out and keeps on driving. Cue the very next lap when Scott Ditson plows into the back of Takuma Sato under braking, giving him a penalty of being sent to the back of the line for avoidable contact.
And may I just say, this was when my third and fourth pecs were taken out. A really good day for me.
It wouldn't end all bad for Scott Ditson, but it did set him back quite a bit. Also, yeah, but eventually Michael Jordan will miss a buzzer-beating shot. So too will Scott Ditson have a really strange and avoidable contact penalty. Whoops.
Yeah.
He wasn't even trying to pass Sato. He was trying to pass Hinchcliffe. That's how badly he did.
Oh, God. It was pretty messed up. But after these, after this melee of early cautions, we had a very clean race afterwards. Robert Wickens was running very well. He was making very, very decisive passes, like one around Sebastian Bourdais within, like, the first third of the race that I think really solidified his place. Like, oh my goodness, this kid is for real. He could actually do this thing. Alexander Rossi was keeping in touch, and Sebastian Bourdais was making the strategy work, though with the way that Wickens and Rossi were driving so far ahead of the rest of the pack, it was going to take kind of a miracle for him to catch up. Can I also just say, by the way, that Elio Castroneves did a very good job of not only delivering the starter's command, but being the only person in the commentary booth, apart from Alan at Bestwick, who was not already beaten down by life.
Yeah, he still has a soul.
As I pointed out on Twitter, Alan Bestwick is overdue back surgery from having to carry Scott Goodyear and Eddie Cheever on his shoulders for 5 straight years.
Oh, it's just, oh,
I mean,
Alan.
Considering all the recent drivers who, you know, don't have a ride or have retired, I'm surprised that, you know, Goodyear and Cheever haven't been, like, replaced yet.
I mean, they're safe from Dario because Dario has already said he wouldn't commentate on IndyCar because he likes his wee thing with Ganassi.
Yeah, they pay him just to sit about. It's a pretty good gig.
Yeah, it's a pretty good gig. Paid to sit around.
Sit around and give a sort of thumbs up to Dixon and pats on the head to Ed Jones.
And occasionally get your headset on fire.
Oh, God.
Speaking of the man who was with him at the time, Max Chilton put in a decent showing for Carlin early on in the race. However, unfortunately, he faded a bit towards the end, and with Charlie Kimball going out, it didn't look good for Carlin, but Max Chilton was able to keep his nose clean, and he was able to get to the end of the race trouble-free, right?
Before
we mention... Before we mention how well Charlie fulfilled his Twitter obligations, I do have to say RJ said it would take a miracle for Bourdais to catch up with the leading two. Well, Chilton was quite miraculous.
Okay, so I think we need to set the scene here. We're in the final 10 laps of this race, and Alexander Rossi is still trying to catch up to Robert Wickens. He's had some opportunities to get past, but I believe, I want to say it was with 5 laps to go, he tries a pass on Wickens, gets really, really out of shape, and loses about 2 seconds off of the back of Wickens.
Mm-hmm.
So we have...
Think Eduardo Mortara at Hong Kong.
Right, yeah. So on lap 102, Renee Binder, who did such an amazing job of being so spectacularly mediocre all weekend, Renee Binder stuffs it in the wall in turn 10. Bring out a
caution. Thank you for not saying that bomb. Thank you for not using the bomb. I appreciate it, RJ.
but That's okay. I was gonna tweet it out at the time it had happened, but much like Renee Bender, I just simply was not quick enough compared to my peers. That brings out a caution for four more laps and puts the restart back into Robert Wickens' hands. He had a huge advantage by this point, and it had all just evaporated. He gets a good restart, and then two laps later, as Manor Marussia Road to Indy alumni Robert Wickens is holding off Manor Marussia alumni Alexander Rossi, Manor Marussia alumni Matt Chilton stalls it in turn eight. They have a quick yellow, so the race comes down to a two-lap dash for the cash, effectively creating a green, white, checker situation. All Robert Wickens has to do is nail the restart, and he's still golden to become the first driver since...
Graham Rahal.
I guess we can count... No, because Graham Rahal had a season under his belt by then, and that wasn't even the first race of the season.
I believe it's Monsieur Sebastian Bourdais you're talking about.
No, because he didn't even win his first race.
Yeah.
You would have to go back to Buzz Calkins in the inaugural Indy Racing League event in 1996. He still counts as a true rookie because he was stepping up for Indy Lights that year. And if you don't wish to count Buzz Calkins in 96 in Orlando, then you have to go back to Nigel Mansell at 93 in Surfers Paradise. Then before him, Graham Hill in the 1966 Indianapolis 500 to find the last time a driver ever won their very first IndyCar race.
Well, who could ever forget Buzz Calkins? I'm just saying. I mean, he was the man, you know?
He absolutely
defined the generation of racing.
He is the only man so generous enough to share his inaugural series title with another gentleman. Yeah. We get the restart with two to go. Robert Wickens does not get as good of a jump. Alexander Rossi gets a great jump. Robert Wickens leaves Alexander Rossi two car width space, I guess.
Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah, it was a lot. It was like probably a car and a half's width of space on the inside to, you know, try to slide it in through.
And Alexander Rossi finds the same spot in the paint where Graham Rahal and Scott Dixon before him had lost their shit under braking. Skids into Robert Wickens. Wickens will go into the wall. Alexander Rossi will give up the lead. Who's that coming out of nowhere to win the race? Sebastian Bourdais, number one in Tampa for the second year in a row.
Yeah. Somewhere, whoever, like, put together that Seal Master deal was like, I knew Bourdais was going to pull it together.
And again, if you had told me 10 years ago that out of reunification, Dale Coyne Racing was going to be the last team standing, well, if you also count the fact that Jimmy Vassar was still a part-time team owner, and he's part-time investor in that side of the garage, but who cares? If you told me that they would still be the last team standing in the era of Newman Haas and Forsyth and all the others, you're lying to yourself. Y'all, Sebastian Bourdais did it again. He made that strategy work, took four pit stops, and played it to perfection, leading 30 laps and winning the race.
We know it was as a result of that incident between Wickens and Paul Tracy. No, Alex Rossi. Mustn't confuse these two things. But yeah, if there was anyone to win this race, oh my god, I'm so happy it was Sebastian Bourdais. The comeback we can now say is complete. Yes. Man, that was so great to see.
No, just it's not complete yet. If you remember how they went with Hinch, we're going to.
It's not complete until we exploit the career-threatening incident that happened the year before. Which, by the way, Zoe, that should have been at least down your whole beverage on the IndyCar drinking game.
Yeah, I forgot about that. But again, I wasn't expecting so many puns to have arrived this season either.
That just makes the need for the drink
just
more.
Just from our rookie class alone, we are chock full of puns. Yes.
But the drinking game will be getting updated as the season progresses, so...
That's right. The last laps incident had people feeling some kind of way. I want to go around the room and ask how you feel about this. Now, I'm not sure if I want to... I'm not sure. Charlie, I'll come back to you in a second because I see your Discord handle of hashtag justice for Wiggins.
I'm sensing I already know the answer to this.
Any volunteers?
I'll happily go first. That was the stupidest thing Alexander Rossi could have done. Because Wiggins, it wasn't the fact that he just forced it in there and Wiggins had blocked him. Wiggins gave him so much room and Rossi lost it. And I'm even more annoyed about the fact he got to keep the podium afterwards. Like, he wasn't penalised for binning Wiggins. Wiggins ended up way down the order and Rossi still got third, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, if you recall, Scott Dixon did get an avoidable contact penalty to restart the back of the field, and then a subsequent drive-through penalty for pit speed violation. Scott Dixon, just too raw and inexperienced, and too wild for this level of racing, quite frankly.
Yes. Yeah, he's just inexperienced. I don't know what Scott's doing out there. But yeah, just as a little interjection, I'm going to read how avoidable contact is defined in the IndyCar rulebook. So, rule 9.3.3, avoidable contact. The primary responsibility for avoiding contact with a competitor resides in the overtaking competitor, and the secondary responsibility resides with the competitor who is being overtaken. A competitor who fails to demonstrate their responsibility and initiates a maneuver that results in contact with another competitor may be penalized.
May, but as we're prone to find out, as Daytona taught us, as past situations and other IndyCar events have taught us, the rules are written down. That's how they're defined. Sometimes they're not always interpreted as such.
Hmm. Which I don't quite get, because if anything, they need to be the one place they need to be enforced is when it's happening for an elite of a race.
Yeah, especially in the last few minutes. I kind of get the situation that it feels like, okay, this is one that me and Charlie and Ryan will get. It's like at the end of a hockey game that's very, very close, and all of a sudden the refs just decide, we're not calling anything. These cross checks, these hooks, and these holds, yeah, just play on. We're not affecting the outcome of this race.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a deliberate hit, obviously, but I do feel that it could have been very much avoidable. But at the same time, you know, I think they would have penalized him had he gone on to win the race. But ultimately, having lost the win of the race was enough damage done for Rossi, in my opinion.
It's kind of that situation where they felt like penalizing Rossi would have been, like, kind of in their way also affecting the outcome of the race.
Floyd is voicing his disagreement with us.
Should we also not forget that Graham Rahal may have dodged an avoidable contact penalty of his own and finished just a place ahead of him in second?
Yes. He really did luck out the fact that he was at the back of the grid.
Can we just talk about the fact that none of the top three finishers in this race made it? It started in the top 10.
Yeah.
On a street course where you need to start up the front, traditionally. But that really shouldn't take away from the drive that Robert Wiggins had. He led a very nice 69 laps. He started on pole. If those late cautions hadn't have happened, I think he drives away and wins that race on a canter, makes history as a first-time race winner.
Yeah, I'm willing to argue if that first corner like incident didn't take place, he would have won the race, because you could have told in the laps leading up to that restart that Rossi's tires were pretty much gone. He was sliding through every corner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Robert Wickens, apart from that, drove a flawless race. And again, this was the first time he had driven a single-seater competitively since 2011.
Only a few years.
Just remember, the last time he did drive that single-seater, who did he beat to a championship, I wonder?
Would that be one Alexander Rossi, who finished two spots behind him in the order in third? What happened to the guy in second place?
Yeah, I'm just looking here. Daniel Ricciardo. Never heard of him.
Yeah,
nobody. Ricciardo. Nope.
John Eric Verne as well. Never heard of him. Oh, my goodness. It was a lot of fun for all the teeth gnashing. Folks, let's talk about how Team Penske is in all sorts of trouble. The dynasty is over. Joseph Newgarden finished seventh. Will Power finished 10th. And Simon Pagenaud finished 13th. That was not a very Penske-rific day.
Yeah. It was not a Penske day. The bow tie was not strong.
No, the bow tie was very bad. They only got two of their cars in the top 10. Remember when we all thought that Chevy was just going to do laps around Honda for the course of a full season? Oh, buddy. All of a sudden, the Universal Aero Kit has kind of leveled the playing field.
You say that, but of course, a what if I'm thinking of is if Will Power doesn't spin on the first lap, perhaps he could have challenged for the win and could have been right up there.
That's very, very true. Will Power is always good at these tracks.
It seems to just be circumstance for this weekend. I have a strong feeling that Team Iceland will rise again.
That's future GRC champions Team Penske, mind you. All in all, great day for Schmidt Peterson Motorsport. Robert Wickens made a ton of fans over the past weekend, even as some Associated Press journalists tried to throw shade and suggest that nobody would have ever heard of who Robert Wickens was. Again, he never even got a pre-race interview in what I guess constituted as ABC's pre-race show. All 3 minutes of it.
All 3 minutes of it. Didn't get a free race interview. Who did get a free race interview?
I would not happen to know that. I genuinely don't know.
I don't know either, because BT Sport, I didn't get to see the free race.
All 3 minutes of it.
All three Good minutes God. Of it.
Good God in heaven.
I assume if the poll winner didn't get interviewed, then nobody got interviewed.
No, it was a very rushed together broadcast. Much like the broadcast team themselves, who again were let go from their contracts about this time 9 months ago.
Did ABC just forget that? Oh, we have to broadcast IndyCar for at least one more year.
Yeah. Not even one more year, just a couple more weekends.
Yeah, just a couple more weekends.
And they fired how many people in their racing department? Like basically everybody.
Yeah,
pretty much everybody. They got rid of Dr. Jerry. They fired
Dr.
Jerry.
No, not Dr. Jerry.
Dr. Jerry Punch has been there since before there even was an ESPN.
Yeah.
That may be slight exaggeration.
But he was there before there was an Indy Racing League.
Yes, but the point remains that Robert Wickens did phenomenal. He gained a lot of fans. He gained a lot of people's respect. Hell, I wasn't even sure where to place him because, yeah, you take a driver who's been out of single-seater racing that long and who had enjoyed some success in DTM. He won a race pretty much every year he competed, but never got to compete for a championship.
You're saying, a driver who last raced a single-seater in 2011... and has been racing in another series for 6 years and comes back to single-seater racing in 2018 and just does that and practically dominates the whole race. I wonder if we're going to see something similar to that in May.
No, don't you even imply
oh,
that.
Dear
don't
God,
even
no.
imply that.
That would be a certain Miss Danica Patrick, number 13.
Like,
insert your very funny, unlucky jokes
here.
She
will save the world of the Indy 500 because without her, the world will end.
Like, on the broadcast, they just imply that he was in German Touring Cars, and it was just like any other Touring Cars series. Like,
they were so hesitant to mention any other series. Like, when they're talking to Helio as well in the commentary booth, this they keep saying, like, sports cars or Sebring.
Yeah.
Like, saying the word IMSA is just going to cause the end of the world. Like, okay.
Yeah.
You're not even going to get the TV contract for next year. You fired most of your employees. Why do you care about this so much?
It's the standard broadcast playbook. You don't advertise your competition.
Yeah, especially when you have Pirelli World Fit Challenge on the support bracket. Which, by the way, buddy, Alvaro Parent, you escaped a big one down at turn 10. Oh boy. Honestly, though, it goes back to the point that I was trying to make, like, about this time last year when Bourdais won this event. At some point, we're going to appreciate how good Sebastian Bourdais really is as a four-time back-to-back-to-back-to-back champion with over 30 professional top-level wins before and after unification, a Le Mans class winner, a two-time overall winner of the Daytona 500, and he doesn't even turn 40 until next year, and he's still got plenty left in the tank, and he's doing this all with the team with the smallest budget in all of IndyCar.
God, like, I know how slightly unlikely it is, but man, a fifth title would be so sweet.
Oh my goodness, it would be outstanding. Why don't we break down the running order of this Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, won of course by Sebastian Bourdais, who led 30 laps en route to victory and 110 laps. Average race speed, 86.207 miles per hour, 11 lead changes, 25 laps under caution. Time of the race, 2 hours, 17 minutes, 48.4954 seconds. Graham Rahal finishes second ahead of Alexander Rossi. Take that for what you will. James Hinchcliffe, who quietly had a very good day despite being overshadowed much of the day by his teammate, comes in fourth in his first race working with Lena Gade. Ryan Hunter-Reay came back from the first lap drama to finish fifth. In case you were wondering, many people were wondering if Ryan Hunter-Reay was starting to lose his status as the alpha dog of Andretti Autosport. I think he might have something to say about that. Ahead of Scott Dixon in sixth, who again recovered from his two penalties to put in a solid result. Joseph Newgarden again was the best of the Penske's in seventh, and he was nowhere for much of the day. Ahead of Ed Jones, who quietly picked up a top 10 finish in his very first day with Chip Ganassi Racing. Marco Andretti had a pretty solid day of his own, finishing in ninth place. And Will Power, despite his sudden ultra-high downforce setup with a damaged rear wing, finishes in 10th. Ahead of Tony Kanaan, who himself spun in the opening lap and recovered to finish 11th. Takuma Sato in 12th after his incident, finishes 12th. Simon Pagenaud in 13th, Gabby Chavez in 14th, was running solidly in the top 10 for most of the day for a team that had never driven a street race. I feel like 14th doesn't do him all the justice that he should, because he had quietly a pretty good day on the track. That rounds out all of your lead lap finishers. Spencer Pigot in 15th, Zach Veach in 16th, Zachary Clayman DeVell in 17th, all finishing one lap down. Robert Wickens, of course, two laps down at 18th. But that result won't tell the whole story, not by a long shot. Matt Chilton in 19th, two laps down, ahead of Charlie Kimball in 20th, three laps down. Jordan King was very impressive early in the race, but he too finished three laps down after trouble sometime during the race. Rene Binder was 10 laps down, dropping out of the race due to contact. He was 22nd, Jack Harvey 23rd, and Matthias Laist classified in 24th, completing only 16 laps. Your next race is in, I want to say it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks time?
Yep, April 7th.
At a track in Avondale, Arizona, based in the Phoenix metropolitan area.
Yeah, I'm just going to say the Raceway at Phoenix.
Yes, Jeff Gordon Raceway.
I think after this weekend, it's Kevin Harvick Raceway.
Oh, yes, you're right. Here's your NASCAR update. Kevin Harvick is on En Fuego, with or without being caught cheating by NASCAR on Reddit. NASCAR's most sophisticated technical support team. Ah, goodness. Well, After a quick musical interlude, we'll talk a bit about some testing which just wrapped up. Because we finally need to get this show on the road, folks. Please, someone, anyone, please. Survived. We've survived 8 days of testing. You can turn down the Freddie Mercury and Montserrat duets. We are no longer in Barcelona. So testing was definitely a thing. We had 8 days, and if you are a fan of Mercedes AMG Petronas F1 team, how many Mercedes fans have got here? Say hey!
Hey!
Say hey, Chris. I know you're listening.
All right! Okay. So, Mercedes... Well, they're in very good shape. They did more laps than any other team. They didn't have the eye-popping ultra-fast lap times. The fastest lap of the test was still Sebastian Vettel's 117.182. But pretty much the consensus says that, hey, their long race pace is still at least a half the second to the good of everybody else.
Yay? Question mark? Are we supposed to be happy with this? Or not? Guys, I'm really surprised that McLaren and Renault aren't going to... They weren't up there, you know, after their incredible chassis got that Renault engine. The best aero and chassis on the grid.
Yes, all they needed was a marginally more powerful and marginally less unreliable engine to get them up to the top. I'm just reading over my notes. McLaren did which amount of laps? Oh, the least amount. Okay, but that's, I mean, they were still, okay. Fernando Alonso had a quick lap in the second week of testing that was good enough for third overall, but nobody is fooled because reliability is still an issue after it seemed like every day during the second week of testing a McLaren Renault had some sort of mechanical failure.
Guys, Autosport told us this is their year. Fernando Alonso, third world championship, finally. They lied to us.
Yeah, and even Eric Boullier is downplaying the struggles McLaren are having, which totally aren't comparable to my school grades.
Oh my god. I don't even know what to make of the situation. All I'm just hoping for is, like, I'm pretty sure season 2 of Grand Prix Driver is not going to involve McLaren. It's just going to involve Fernando Alonso not racing in any Grand Prix and driving around a Toyota prototype.
Yeah. This from F1 TV correspondent Will Buxton. Summed up in 280 characters. McLaren, wretched testing, whether small issues creating big delays or big issues hidden as small as you can't get back lost time. And when the car was running, the pit stops were a shambles. Headline quick laps on Hypersofts fooling nobody. Boullier was short and clipped in interviews. He's worried.
Dude, I'd be worried too, because you're probably going to be fired.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you've changed the engine, you've changed your supporting driver. The only thing that's left to change are the team manager, and if he decides to get bored with this for good, your lead driver as well.
Enter Lando the Mando.
By the way, testing overall in the speed trap, McLaren's Fernando Alonso, 324.3. Where were Toro Rosso in comparison with the same Honda engine that was dragging McLaren down for the last 3 years? Pierre Gasly, 333.3. 9 clicks faster.
Oh, that VTEC.
And I could have told you this coming from a mile away. McLaren's not the only team that were having issues during testing. Sauber, of course, yes. They're Sauber. They're a team that has, they're running on a shoestring budget compared to everybody else. They were struggling pretty badly. So too were Williams. from Buxton again. The car is reportedly an absolute dog to drive. It looks horrible on track, heavy, lazy, and unresponsive. Boy, that's such a mood. It can't turn the tires on. The drivers look browbeaten. It's going to be a very hard season. Kubica, however, a breath of fresh air, insight, and experience could be key. By the way, Sergei Sorotkin did lap the fastest of any one of the Williams drivers. Still is not as quick as Charles Leclerc and Sauber. Oh, but let's pour through these numbers. There were a lot of numbers here to do. Mercedes, of course, hit 1,000 laps. Ferrari second most with 929. Toro Rosso did 822 laps, good enough for third on the board. Pierre Gasly and Brendan Hartley were solidly middle of the table throughout testing. And the Honda engine just by themselves did about 4,000 kilometers. We were starting to see this engine come good. I think McLaren are, again, going to regret that that relationship got as bad as it did.
Yeah,
I don't think this relationship could get any worse than it is now.
Should we talk about how Ferrari are apparently going to lose their footing on second place? They may slip down to third because despite those laps that Vettel and Raikkonen did to lead testing, they still look like on their long runs like they're even slower than Red Bull.
Good. That's really nice to hear. well done, Ferrari. It's going to be such a good season. And Mercedes weren't even running their engines at Haywick at all. Good. That's son of a bitch. Why did I have to say Vettel was going to win the championship on Twitter for testing? Why?
Danny, so you need a rope.
Oh, I already have one, Lou Zoe. It's ready to go for Australia.
If there was another big surprise out of testing, Haas looked to be in very, very good shape. No, they didn't put in a whole lot of miles, but every bit of feedback from the drivers, they say that the chassis is good. The tire corrective lap times, according to Buxton, say put them less than half a second off the Ferraris. And if that plays out to be true, Haas could get some podium finishes. And we know that they're good to start the season. My concern is whether or not they're going to be able to sustain that for the whole season, because one thing I've known through their first 2 years is that Haas will get out of the gate strong and then taper off towards the end of the season, particularly as the brakes start to go out on Romain Grosjean's side of the garage. Do you think we have a new king of the best of the rest? A new king of the midfield, if we will?
I hope so. I really hope so.
Yeah.
It's just cool to have an American team finally do well. Like, really well.
I hope for Gene's
and
sake.
Hopefully it'll help. Maybe they can do all the promotional work that ESPN aren't going to do for F1.
Oh no, but we did have an ESPN F1 commercial during the IndyCar broadcast. It lasted all of 15 seconds, but it was there. King, are you excited about Renault? They look like they were about fourth best.
Yeah, I really think that Renault are going to prove to be the best of the rest. Because it's more of, I feel like Renault is going to be the best of the rest because I see no other serious contenders to that title.
Oh, goodness. Yes, and even Sebastian Vettel is saying, please do not read too much into our lap times at Ferrari.
Even he's off the narcotic.
For more on this, you can check out next week's Motorsport 101, our Formula One season preview, which will have Andre Harrison back, and we'll tell you all the reasons why Mercedes are definitely going to win the 2018 Formula One World Championship in a landslide.
So, guys, I have two big pieces of news from our favorite electric championship, Formula E.
Ooh, yes. Tell us more.
Yes. Well, despite not being on the calendar this year due to the historic Monaco Grand Prix, next year, Formula E will race on the full-length Monaco Grand Prix circuit.
Nice! And that's going up the hills and down them as well.
Oh my god, the replies. The replies to all the stories about, to all the posts about the story, saying that, do they have the power to go up the hills? I'm like, yeah, a guy on a bicycle has enough power to go up a hill. And I'm like...
Are you sure, though?
Yes, I'm 100% certain that these cars...
Oh, yeah, but, like, they're in a milk float, innit? Like, 4 kilowatts of power? Never make it up.
Yeah, so...
I mean, these cars only have instant torque.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like they have no torque.
What is our other Formula E news that we have
that
to share?
With the FIA World Motorsport Council meeting last week, they had to approve all the things for the upcoming Formula E season that they could possibly implement. One of the things that they will have is that during the race that they've asked that the cars have 2 different power modes available to use during the race, where they stated that there will be a regular level of power and a high level of power. Don't know how this could be implemented during the race, but it's seen as being an option to the fact that there won't be any car swaps that next year, that there won't be any car swaps, that there won't be any pit stops for tires because Michelin is against that idea.
I have a feeling that they're going to use high power mode, much like push to pass, that there's only going to be a certain amount you can use during the race. Because it's basically going to be that. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of having the low power mode if you don't really set the regulations like how much you can use of either one at any time?
Yes. And, yeah, they stated that the gap in performance between the regular power and high power will be about a second a lap.
These cars are going to just haul. They're going to do 170 in old money.
Yeah.
Imagine what Buemi, Degrassi, and Napter are going to do with that and the fan boost.
Also, we don't know if fan boost will be around next year.
Oh.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm going to miss so much. How can we contribute to the sport as fans now?
I have a feeling fan boost will be around next year, but nothing has confirmed or denied that.
It was a very funny thing, you know, when fan boost was first launched, and I believe all the hubbub was like, oh no, this is counter to motorsport. It's effectively going to make fans determine who wins the race. And now we're just tired of it because it's like, dude, it's the same 2 or 3 people to win it every week.
Yeah, and it's pretty much like a push to one pass. And also, little tidbit of news that's kind of a side story to the 2 power boost thing. Next year, there will no longer be a point for fastest lap.
So no 2016 London E Prix Memorial fastest lap points.
Though there will be a bonus point. There'll still be a bonus point next year for quote the most efficient driver.
Right, right. So if you get knocked out like turn one, lap one, and you've used like a percent of your energy, does that mean you get that point?
No, I believe
you win.
I do believe it's the same amount of distance completed that you need to have finished to be, you know, classified as a finisher. So you have to do about 90% of race distance.
Oh, no, damn it.
They should just let me galaxy my brain all the way to 11 points in the world championship.
Though,
just by starting and parking.
They
start and park strategy.
The
button is your strategy. Hell yeah.
They haven't officially released what most efficient will be defined as, but, quote, it will be a new energy management parameter. So we gotta wait and see.
Big news in the work to consolidate the ladder to Formula One. They've done it.
It's official, y'all. Also,
holy shit.
The World Motorsport Council has officially granted promotion of the new International Formula 3 to Formula One management, meaning that the long-rumored merger between GP3 and European Formula 3 will happen next year, and the new International Formula 3 will be a support series like Formula 2 to Formula 1, and I'm pretty sure they're going to run 9 or 10 rounds next year.
Yes, and how terrible it is that FIA's overreaching bureaucracy has given Formula 1 a consolidated ladder to the top level of the sport. You know, just like IndyCar has, and MotoGP has, and NASCAR has to some extent. How dare they?
How dare they effectively manage this sport?
Hashtag liberty out, y'all. Hashtag liberty out.
Hashtag more like tyranny media, am I right, folks? Thank you. Unlike some other phrases, I actually will charge royalties for that.
Though I see the big gripe that people have with the new Formula 3, because the new Formula 3 is going to be a spec series. For the first time, Formula 3 will be a spec series, even though it basically is a spec series right now in Europe. You need to run a Dallara if you want to win.
Right. I was actually talking with a driver who raced in Formula 3 about a decade ago, and even back then it was still mostly Dallaras. You don't want to be with like some off-brand chassis like for instance a Dome.
Yeah.
Are we sure yet if it's going to be like just an evolution of what we know as Formula 3 now, or is this just going to be GP3 with a different name? Is that just going away entirely?
No. It will be a Formula 3 rule set. They do run, 2-liter engines and everything. Basically, GP3 will cease to exist, and those teams will either choose to leave or join Formula 3.
I'm hoping it's the latter, because that means that we'll get a mid-2010s Formula 3 racing again.
But it's it's also expected that it's still the same format. So, there'll be 3 races each round. Right now, they're not sure about the limit. It's going to be 3 cars per team, though. We won't get, the 5-car armada that Carlin's rolling up to in this year's, European Formula 3 season.
Or the 6 cars of Andretti Autosport at the Indianapolis 500.
So we're either going to see 27 or 30 cars next year.
You know what this means, though, with Formula 3 now being on the F1 support ticket? That now means the PAL Grand Prix is going to have to find a new series to center itself around.
Ooh, my gut feeling is that it'll probably be French Formula 4, which this year, for the first time, is an FIA Formula 4 championship.
Nice. I also wonder what effect this is going to have on some of the other Formula 3-based championships, your Euro Formula Opens, your All Japan F3s, which still in good health.
What is expected to happen is that all the other Formula 3 championships will be basically Formula 3B. It'll be a feeder series for this international Formula 3, because apparently the FIA want to set up a European replacement to the defunct European set to be defunct European championship.
Which would make sense, because effectively you're making Formula 3 and a half now.
Yes. So basically what they wanted to do is try to set up a merger between the less, the less prestigious European, less prestigious national Formula 3 championships that still exist in Europe.
Or what used to be the British Formula 4 Championship, now operating as BRDC Formula 3.
Yes. And it's no news has been made about the progress and those negotiations, but hopefully they get something sorted together, because there's already, Formula 3 Asia Championship, there's Formula 3 in Australia, obviously we already mentioned Formula 3 in Japan, that pretty much Formula 3 is a lot stronger than it was a couple years ago.
And this despite having less runners in it. Can we also talk about the fact that Surprise, we had a non-Lando Norris leader of the final day of Formula 2 testing. It was George Russell, the other top-of-the-line, can't-miss British prospect.
And they're like, oh, there's no British racing talent. We're like, whoa, what are you talking about, fam?
There's just no top-of-the-line British racing drivers. Where would we find them?
Yeah,
Did you not see Motorsport do that article that was kind of a... Lewis Hamilton's contract ends this year. What will he do?
I wonder.
What would Lewis Hamilton do? Does he become music mogul? Overly generous and charitable humanitarian working around the world? NASCAR driver? Question mark, exclamation mark. Richard Petty's got the number 44 available. I'm just saying, Lewis and Bubba dream team.
I think he's going to do all the things. All the things.
Is he going to buy a football club?
Nah, that doesn't seem like a style.
Is he going to buy a pro wrestling promotion?
He's going to buy AAA, y'all.
He's going to buy TNA.
Oh, God. You thought Dixieland was fantastic.
Instead of four sides, it's now a 44-sided ring. After all, Lewis Hamilton is a noted professional wrestler. So, too, is Townsend Bell. And so, too, is Hermie Sadler, NASCAR journeyman of note.
Oh, are you forgetting the Canadian Paul Tracy?
Oh, yes, you're right. The Blue Demon. Yeah. The Blue Demon himself.
I can just see it now. It's not about fuel flow limits. It's about no limits.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'm ready for 44 live.
Oh, dear. Any other news from any other series?
Oh, my goodness.
Apparently, there's a pilot that is getting organized, which is going to be following the wives and partners of some of the NASCAR drivers.
Speaking of which, would anybody who watched The Bachelor, would anybody like to fill me in on what happened?
Right. I have a very basic understanding of this. Basically, Ari Lehnike Jr., the greatest IndyCar driver in the world, as we know, I think he proposed to somebody.
Oh, yeah. Then
he changed. He proposed to her and everything. And then, like, later on, he changed his mind. And he's like, right, I have to go and tell her now. I'm going to go with somebody else.
Yeah. So that's, that is the weird catch-all thing about The Bachelor. Whoever wins The Bachelor, like, you need to get married. You, like, there needs to be a proposal at the end, no matter what the ending is.
So basically, did he propose to the first girl?
Yeah, he proposed to the first girl, and then changed his...
Yeah, he changed his mind.
Changed his mind.
What a committed man he is to get married.
Then, and the whatever that the girls sort of get to talk back to him, one of the girls who became really good friends with the one that he proposed to and then broke off the engagement to, went through him. and then he proposed to the other girl, and they've done talk show. They've done Good Morning America. And he took her round St. Pete in the two-seater. And Jenny Fryer was rather annoyed that she didn't get to ask him why he was blocked by him.
And my question is, what's going to happen at the Stadium Super Trucks race?
I don't
know. Because you know Ari's going to be there. And you know probably somebody else in that grid watched The Bachelor and is going to be so enraged by what happened that they're just going to try and put Ari Jr. in the tires the first chance they get.
I mean, when he done The Bachelorette, he got an absolute slagging. Like, his two-seater, they actually put Rosie's stickers on it. And then had Mario even go up to him with a rose.
I think I know who it's going to be. I think I know who it's going to be. It's going to be
hit me with
the
it.
One, the only, Robbie Gobby, Rorden Gordon.
Rorden Gordon!
And also, I should note, I looked up how long the marriages from The Bachelor have lasted, and only five out of, I'd say, yeah, out of five out of the now 20, oh, 30 plus, oh god.
Good.
Are like still ongoing, pretty much.
And
all
they were just one proposal. That was with one proposal. Never mind.
Yes.
Two.
Yes, much like the NCAA men's basketball tournament, The Bachelor on ABC. It is a loser machine.
Yes, it is a loser machine. Forcing people into being contractually obligated to get married. Those marriages are not going to last long.
And should we point out that there was one girl who took part in this season and lied to her mother about what she was doing?
Oh, it's a very common thing. Like, people go on the Bachelor, and Bachelorette in relationships just because they know they're going to get famous.
Mm-hmm. Well, she went on the show, told her mother, actually, I'm off to work on a cannabis farm. the mother got concerned and phoned the police and had her declared missing, and basically the production had to say to her, listen, we need you to phone your mum. You'll be declared missing. Because the girl decides it was less embarrassing to say, or less shameful or whatever, to say, I'm off to work at a marijuana farm. Than it was to say, I'm off to go on a reality TV show.
What else did we have at St. Petersburg apart from reality show conflict and actual conflict out track? We had Mazda Road to Indy. Renus Van Kalmthout, or as he's known in the States, Renus VK. Because, you know, these Dutch surnames are so hard to pronounce. That's why Americans know of that great Dutch striker, Ruud Venus, or that great former Caterham and Sauber driver who occasionally makes the occasional banter on Twitter, Guido Van Digi. Renus VK won both the Pro Mazda races. Kyle Kirkwood and Alex Barron split the winnings in USF 2000. By the way, I should point out this is not the Alex Barron who raced in IndyCar and kart in the late 90s and early 2000s. This is a different Alex Barron who is French and actually raced in Indy Lights all the way back in 2012.
Something I should mention about the Pro Mazda race, I was watching the second race online and they had a really weird start. Like, the start of the race, they had the flagger wave the flag at the start, and he waved it really early, so much so that it caught a lot of the front guys off guard, and there was one guy who went from, like, P8 all the way to P1, like, right at the first corner, and then after that, they red flagged the race for, like, 10 minutes because of the start procedure.
Oh, that's mega. And from what I understand, not as many Pro Mazda engines blowing up like something-something sacks of potatoes. Which gets us to Indy Lights. Patricio Ward taking his first win in the first race and looking good to win the second race until he went off at turn four, I believe, and Santi Urrutia went on to take the victory. It was still a Latin American beatdown in Indy Lights, which only had 9 cars for the weekend and then only 8 for the first race when Eric T was bending in qualifying. And then had to borrow a car from Carlin. Yeah. It's good quality over quantity, but at the same time, we're back in single digits, fam.
Come on.
That's not good.
Like, Lights, we want you to do well. Your cars are great. Like,
your cars are beautiful. Your drivers are very good. We need more of you out there. Hell, we'll even take Alfonso Chalas.
Anyone.
Get Frankie Munoz in here.
That's Atlantic Series champion, Frankie Muniz. He was not Atlantic Series champion, but he is the champion of... He was the champion of Sunday night sitcom television in his years in Malcolm the Middle.
Can I also say, at one point, Eddie Irvine and David Coulthard had a TV, a reality TV show where they taught a bunch of celebs how to drive, like, race. One of the said celebs was Frankie Muniz.
What else is, what's happening this weekend? What we got? We had World Rally Championship. Surprise, OJ won. He also won the power stage, but didn't get to keep his points. And, spoiler, Sebastian Loeb, still pretty good at this thing.
Oh my god, he is ageless.
Where's the painting?
We have MotoGP starting up this week, so be sure to tune in to Bike Live on the Motorsport 101 Network, and if you pledge $5 a month on Patreon, you could get early access to every episode of both shows.
And Formula E might get its first wet race.
Oh my god.
It's a spanner in my plans for Glasgow E-Prix. Well, the main selling point is that it's Scotland and Scotland reigns.
Yes, but Punta del Este is Punta del Beste. That's this weekend. MotoGP's this weekend from Qatar. Future World Cup destination Qatar.
Whoa, whoa. And of course, future Formula E destination Qatar.
Oh, okay. That's right. And we have the 12 hours of Sebring and IMSA. IMSA's back, y'all.
Should we mention the comment that Lewis Hamilton came out with in regards to Barcelona being repaved?
Oh yes, please do.
He was not happy with it and complained that
basically that the character of the track that they're battling with the motorcycle riders, which it wasn't the most tasteful comment, especially coming off the back of Luis Salom's accident. I get it. But at the same time, people complain about track resurfacing all the time.
Yeah. That's like the most North American comment he has ever made.
Who said Lewis Hamilton was not America's greatest Formula
Though,
One driver?
It does make you think, like, this is probably a Bike Live topic, but, like, MotoGP wants to have a street race? Like,
oh, dear God, no.
Yeah, it's...
Like, doesn't everyone remember the Macau Grand Prix?
Le Mans TT?
Yes, but they do race road bikes, but also Macau is... It makes Isle of Man look like a race that is held in bumper cars.
Yeah, like, I don't want to go down how dangerous the Macau Grand Prix motorcycle race is. Like, it is expected that someone will lose their life.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, MotoGP on a street circuit, no matter how big it is, that does not sound like it's going to go well.
Nope, just
because the bikes are that much faster. Dear God, no.
It's like, you hear all this stuff of like the Isle of Man TT, and I've forgotten the other one that's in Ireland.
The Northwest 200?
Yeah. And so the crashes you see in that one, and those bikes aren't as fast as the MotoGP ones, or as powerful. So it's a wee bit...
I don't know. Yeah. I think it was a very poorly thought out comment. I mean, it's not the first time that we've had this debate of motorcycles versus Formula One and who gets direction of the track, because keep in mind, we had the huge fuss over the runoff of Parabolica being repaved over for bikes. That was very recent.
Remember how everyone was terrified that Monza was gonna get like changed completely because of the superbikes, and how that like didn't happen.
Oh my goodness! It's like they turned Monza into a 3/8 mile short track now. They turned Monza into a football stadium. What the fuck? They turned Monza into a drawing of Pop Team Epics characters. Oh, goodness. This show is already on fire and ablaze. It started off that way. Do we have any other breaking stories? We have a big show coming up this weekend. Our Formula One season preview. We have two shows on the Motorsport 101 Network. We have a Dre Brief probably coming sometime earlier this week, which you may have already seen by the time you listen to this. Sorry, Dre.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention during our IndyCar segment is I love the new camera angles.
Oh my goodness. How did we forget about the new camera angles? Dog, that nose cam is fire.
Nose cam is fire.
More visor cam. Yep.
They're like, hey, we heard you like all these new experimental camera angles, so we're going to give you even more experimental camera angles.
We're actually going to use them during the broadcast now. That's awesome. So would Formula One embrace all that technology in a timely manner? Well, it makes all the sense in the world. So no.
So. I mean, I will bring it up again. Their camera on the top, which can only look straight ahead or straight back. It can't follow the other car. It's like, I did also see a lot of, like, when it was brought up by Will Buxton and a couple other people, the F1 ones complaining about it, how it was motion sickness and all that. It's like, do you not remember the jaunty camera you used to all gush about on Senna's car when you saw him do that lap of Monaco? It's basically that.
Nah, it was the 80s. Technology wasn't advanced back then. We have higher standards now.
Huh. I think on that bombshell, I think it's time to end it.
Yeah.
Charles, Danny, Zoe, thank you all so much. I'm so sorry I got everything about your names, your place of origin wrong. I'll try to do better next time. It won't get better.
You can take solace in the fact that the only American I'm really mad at this weekend is the driver of the number 27 Andretti car, not you.
But Antonio Felix da Costa didn't race this weekend.
Wait for Punta del Este and come back to me.
Right. Danny, what you got going on? You are writing now.
Yeah, I write for the fine people over at Reeb Motorsport at reebmotorsport.com. We cover literally everything. Bikes, sports cars, open wheel. You can read all about it there, reebmotorsport.com.
Danny's stuff is terrific. Zoe, what do you have going on?
Well, I'll soon hopefully do my first sort of review of the IndyCar season up on Motorsport 101 by the end of the week.
Yes, go ahead and read it. If you've not done so already, it should be up already. Go ahead and read it if you've not done so. If you're listening to this from the future, go ahead and read it again.
If not,
we don't know how time works.
If not, on my personal site, weezoe.wordpress.com, there is the drinking game. So if you wish to use it to rewatch the Saint Pete, give me some feedback. See what we need to add.
And yeah, I forgot to plug my own blog. It's danielbrennanracing.wordpress.com, where you can read all the shit they won't publish on remotorsport.com.
That's wonderful. I've had an interview published on dailysportscar.com interviewing Super GT driver Hideto Yasuoka as he returns the series in 2018, which is something I've got to get ready for because Super GT testing starts this weekend. And oh my god, I am so ill prepared for everything and I am always fatigued. What the fuck just happened on episode 126 of Motorsport 101? Good things. Again, our website, motorsport101.net. You can follow us on YouTube and on Facebook at @motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. Our personal Twitters at DannyBrandon72, at CReginBullRacing, at WeZoe, at RyanEricKing, at RJ O'Connell, at Harrison101HD. And if you love us enough to back us with your money, patreon.com/motorsport101. From a way too packed booth featuring Charles Regibel.
Hey.
Danny Brennan. Zoe Hamilton. Ryan King. And myself, RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
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 Later, all.
You are the world champion!
You know what the end of that ABC broadcast needed?
What?
A video montage set to one shining moment.
Gene Simmons, where are you at?